Hi there, loyal listeners. Thanks for tuning in to number 5 in the highlight series. This episode's theme is the mind. I've taken a few chunks from the chats with Joe Rodriguez, a psychologist and CBT practitioner. We have a chat with Tona Tellefson-Hughes, a chiropractor who set up a garden at her practice to use nature to help teens with anxiety and mental health issues. Then we'll end up with Max Jacobs, also a chiropractor. He's a Buddhist and a student of Tibetan medicine, for his take on how to deal with what's going on in our heads. Anxiety, stress, and how those things seem to be very normal at the moment. And for some people, stress would be just, oh, just a normal part of my life.
Yeah.
And how do we differentiate normal from natural? Because I don't see that. Yes, maybe there's a time for stress, and it's a good thing and sometimes and appropriate. But when does that become unnatural or not a good thing?
Well, I mean, for the people that I see, it's when it starts to have a significant impact. You know, stress, yeah, the body is designed to feel stress, but we're not designed to constantly be in a state of stress and constantly be in a state of anxiety. And I think we've gotten used to very high levels of, to being able to tolerate high levels of it, but it's actually like, it's not a natural state to be in. The body actually doesn't like being in that state all the time. And often we're in that state as a result of thought processes and things related to things that have happened rather than our actual in the moment environment, although it could be to do with actual in the moment environment, because there's a lot going on right now that is creating a lot of stress for people. I tend to see people when it starts to have a significant impact on their ability to function. So it starts to get in the way of them being able to think clearly at work. It's affecting family and relationships. It's affecting physical health, immune systems. You know, bodies are breaking down because we're not able to tolerate the amount of stress that we are constantly in, the levels of stress that we're constantly under. Our brain takes shortcuts. Our brains are quite lazy. Once we have a way of seeing something, we just keep seeing it the same way. So I see my job as trying to help someone see what they can't see. And as soon as you can see that, then that lends itself to give you a bit of leeway into, well, you know, what about all these examples of when you've been a great mum? Or what about all these examples of, what about if there's perfectionist standards there, like we don't have to be, and things don't have to be perfect. Life isn't like that. It's okay to, you know, say fuck it and say it's okay to do things half-assed. I say that all the time. We don't have to put pressure on ourselves to live up to these idealistic standards that are often set by, you know, a comparative mind, the media again, a consumerist society where we think like we always have to have better and we always have to have more. Again, that's the bollocks, you know. So it's really trying to explore that with people, help them see, and then through that, help them start to behave differently, learn to do things differently so that they become comfortable in discomfort. And then that kind of teaches the body like, oh, okay, I don't have to be on threat response all the time.
That's one of the things I've always liked about CBT is that it gives people tools. It's not just like, oh, let's explore your childhood and find out where things are from. It's like, okay, that's great. And it helps you understand. But then it's like, okay, we're not going to dwell on that. That happened. Yeah. We're not going to dwell on that. Because some therapies to me seem like they just spend so much time there and they get bogged down in the past and why I'm this and because of this. And that's it's useful to understand. But I think what really appeals to me is the tools and kind of saying, hey, yeah, that happened. What can we do to change this? What's the positive steps we can take?
Yeah, it's classed as an active directed therapy because it is. There's a lot of talking, and like you said, there is benefit in understanding. And sometimes we do go back in the past. It's not all about the here and now, because sometimes we need to, particularly if somebody's. If a person is very stuck or have had really traumatic experiences, actually the brain holds that person in a state of threat because they are trying to protect the person. The brain is trying to protect the person from that, whatever that event was, ever happening again. They're like, that was awful. I never want you to feel that way again. I never want you to be in that situation. It's a protection. So sometimes we have to go back to help a person work through that, but it's always with the view of coming back to the now, how it can help with the now, what does that mean for the now, and what can we do differently to help our brains realize that now is not then. You have moved on, now you're safe, whatever. My own physical health issues recently, and it wasn't until I saw a specialist that offered a drug, and it was tempting. You know, I thought, wow, if I had this drug, I could have a year symptom free. And then it took a while to think, like, but that's just a year. And then after a year, then what? And it's a really awful toxic drug. And do I really want to put that in my body? And so what else is going, what do I actually need to do here? What do I really need to focus on to get to wellness? I don't want to have to take a drug to get better. You know, I can heal myself. I just really need to find out what I should be focusing on more. And again, you know, admitting you can't be superhuman and do it all. There's some things that you just have to step back from.
I think that question you just posed is probably one of the most powerful. Is what do I really need to do to heal myself? How do you see your role now, and how does the word healer fit with you now?
If it's much better, I'm not a healer in the traditional sense, but I feel that what we do as a chiropractor is we connect people to themselves, mm-hmm. we connect people to their nervous system, and we help people to feel, you know, to recognize their bodies. And that's a form of a healing. And, you know, I think all chiropractors have patients who say, oh, you know, you have this ability and this ability. And I think, again, chiropractic is, you know, the most incredible profession, and we can help and realign people and release people in so many ways. You know, I just know that I have to work with my hands. If I'm on holiday, my hands, they get a bit itchy. But I do, you know, I do work much more intuitively now. I sort of, it's very much about feeling what you're doing and feeling the connection with the patient. Recently, I learned a new word called physiological consent by Brandy and Don McDonald. And that's a wonderful thing about, you know, being connected to the person you work with. Will they want, be happy? Are they happy to receive your care? And that's part of healing. It's about that sense of what, you know, what you do when you put your hands on someone. When they start having treatment with you, first of all, I think that, you know, we help to correct and align them. We also connect them to themselves, so they start listening to their bodies and get that interoception opened up. And from then onward, they will not be the same person. And they.
So can you, sorry to interrupt, interoception, what does that mean?
It's a wonderful word. So, you know, we all know about proprioception, which is the body's ability to know where we are in space, and it has a lot to do with balance and so on. But interoception is the body's and the brain's ability to recognize how we feel, who you are as a therapist. So I think there are therapists who are, they are hands-on only, and that's their skill and that's their genius. And then there are those who are, you know, mixture. And I think what you have to do as a therapist, you have to find your genius.
Yeah.
And where you find your flow, where, and I've thought a lot about this, whether you have a practice with an open room and you have your flow doing that, whether you have, you know, a closed door practice, whether you do 10 minutes, 15 or half an hour, whatever it is, you have to find your flow. And that's where you're going to offer most to your patients.
I think that's absolutely beautiful. I think finding your own genius, finding your flow, finding your space. And I think we all need to do that. And when we find it, not think that it's the only way.
The garden is for young people. It was 13 to 18, but we've expanded it now to 11, who are stressed, anxious, have some form of emotional well-being issue. It could be disordered eating. It can be, and it's 90% social anxiety now since the lockdown. And to come to our garden, young group comes in the morning and the older in the afternoon, because we now expanded to two groups, and they come for an hour and a half, and all they do is garden. And they mow, they weed, they sow, they stake the tomatoes, they care for something outside of themselves. and the nervous system just goes down.
Beautiful.
And you know, there's a lot to has to be done in order for them to come in and all of that being safe. The teens come in and they literally love it because they can be themselves. So some love weeding, others will mow, others, we also do artwork, art and crafts, and that's where they sometimes start chatting. But yeah. We made it very clear that it's not talking therapy. The therapy is being in nature, outside, in the garden, hands in the soil, and helping to grow and build our garden. We also have a labyrinth. So we have a walking labyrinth.
Oh, beautiful.
Which was my little thing. I want a labyrinth. And it's a herbal labyrinth. We were donated herbs from a pepper pot herbs locally. And so you, each step you take, you can then stop and go down and smell the herbs. So you get a different sense. And then you walk again and then you smell another herb. And again, that's another way of mindfully sort of trying to get yourself out of your mind that you had when you came in. And, you know, the testimonials that the parents have given us that are on our website showed that they, you know, a lot of teens were really anxious, really worried, or some haven't left their rooms, and they came, and sometimes they garden on their own, sometimes alongside someone, and slowly but surely they integrate. Some parents say that they're just calmer at home. Some say, we're ready to finish now because our son's got confidence to go and look for a job now.
There's a meditation practice that I didn't want to forget to mention actually today, which is called Tong Len. It means taking and sending. And so it's a really wonderful practice to do, whether you've got somebody yelling at you or in a difficult situation or when you're witnessing suffering, whether that be in another individual or suffering in nature, for example. There's plenty of suffering to go around, so there's a lot of opportunities to use this technique. But basically, the idea is, normally we have this tendency to want all the good things for ourselves and to avoid all of the things that are uncomfortable or you know, that we don't want. And so in this Tong Len technique, we sort of try to do the opposite of that, which might be a bit of an insult to our ego. That's part of the idea. So if you've got somebody who's upset with you and maybe is yelling at you, the idea is to take in what they're expressing. So if they're expressing that emotion, you literally take it in, you take it into yourself, you can inhale it. And if you want to, you can add a visualization to this as if you're inhaling a sort of black sooty smoke coming from them, that anger element. And you take that in and you can sort of convert that to its antidote for them. And honestly, it's also for yourself, in a sense. So you're taking in that anger. And if the antidote is, for example, patience might be the antidote to anger in general, or to that person's anger. You want to convert that black smoke into, let's say, a white light that would ride on your out-breath. And you would attach your patience to that and send it to them. And in the process of doing that, and in the face of that person's anger or frustration, you are creating within yourself more of exactly what the situation needs, which is the antidote, the patience. We have to really think hard about what's going on in our minds because it's really important. For not just for our behavior and what we do to the planet and to others, but it's gonna affect our health on subtle or on gross levels as well.
Wow. So you expand that just from interpersonal relationships into societal and cultural and
Because whatever's going on in our mind is besides the effect it's going to have on us, it's our minds are determining all of our behavior. And then in particular, in my opinion, the problems that we see within, for example, our humanity's relationship to nature, we've got a massive loss of forests worldwide. I mean, something like 97% of the planet is deforested.
Yeah.
Oceans that are, you know, to some degree toxifying or acidifying, and on and on and on. And that's got to do with our relationship to nature, but on another level, it's our relationship with our emotions and things like greed and desire and attachment ultimately. So if we have any hope of, you know, having more trees in the world and,
we need
and
less
more living
greed,
forests,
desire and attachment.
Well, we need to at least start looking at what's going on in our heads. Yeah. When we are attached to things that we cannot truly ever hold on to, we're going to have a problem, right? I mean, I was thinking about this earlier today because I have a little bit of an addiction to raw cashews. And raw cashew nuts, right? So yeah. So in this little addiction of mine, I have a problem, which is that they're not always the same. They're not always in these bags coming out the way that I like them. So I want them to be a certain level of chewy and a certain level of sort of nutty flavor, whatever. And sometimes it's perfect. You know, they're so good. And other times, a total disappointment, too dry, really upsetting, really upsetting stuff. So, you know, and this is again, nature, right? Like Buddhism observes how things really are, which is everything. The cashew nut arises due to various causes and conditions. And if the year that that cashew nut grew, perhaps there was a small drought, ultimately, I wind up with displeasure related to my bag of cashews.
In preparing these highlights, I re-listen to each episode, and I always get a good reminder of things that I can do differently or just look at differently. We learn with time and repetition, so why not click on one of the links in the show notes to re-listen to the full episode of your favorite out of today's three guests.